But anyhow, even if it is not official, I would like to state this particular thing. The last lecture I want to dedicate to my friend, philosopher and guide, Dr. Narasimhacharya. This lecture I would like to dedicate it to our Shaunaka ji. Not because he has just invited me, but because he has been running this particular center very efficiently. He has been putting his soul and heart together for running this wonderful center, Hindu center, and therefore I dedicate this lecture to him. Thank you. We just had an introduction to the samskaras last week. One important thing about ritual is that you cannot dispense with it. Even if you destroy it in one particular form, it will reappear in another form. Where don't we have a ritual? Well, when you go to a court, we are asked to take an oath. Is it not a ritual? When we were taken to the Bodleian Library, for instance, for membership process, we were asked to read a passage that we undertake not to remove from the library or to mark or deface or injure any particular volume, and a promise to obey the rules and regulations of the library. Well, rules must be understood and followed by us, but reading it in the front of a library official is more or less a ritual. Even a confirmed reformist, for that matter, will be following some ritual or other, either consciously or unconsciously. Every religion has a fair amount of ritualistic practices. Religion itself is a question of belief and faith. And therefore, if you have faith in a religion, that automatically means that we have faith in the ritual as well. But at the same time, performing a ritual without understanding its significance is, in a blind fashion for that matter, is useless. But performance of a ritual with a good understanding of its significance and its procedure contributes to one's well-being. And then, coming to the samskaras that we have been discussing, as it is said, not only for the welfare of the individual, but also for the sake of the people around, for the entire community for that matter, and for the all beings of the world in a very, very, general fashion. For example, in most of the rituals, a wonderful Vedic stanza is recited. Tat sanyora vrinimahe gatum yajnaya gatum yajnapataye daivi swastirastunaha swastirmanushebhyaha urdham jigatu bheshajam shanno astudvipade sanchatushpade om shanti shanti shantihi. Very universal prayer. Well, let there be welfare for the priest who is reciting, for the people who listen, for the yajamana. Will there be benefits for all manushyas, for all human beings in this world? And shanno astu dvipade, let there be auspiciousness for all the two-footed beings in this world. It need not refer to men, because already manushya behavior said it may refer to the birds. And shan chatushpade, and for all the four-footed beings, for all the animals of matter. So such prayers are uttered with faith, and they have a two-way advantage. It brings welfare to the individuals, to the community, and wards off all the ills also for them. Well, prayers can do miracles, as we have seen. We have heard of Shakespeare saying, well, more things are wrought by prayer than the world dreams of. Therefore, samskaras gives the performer a rare self-confidence and contributes to his overall personality development for that matter. The mantras uttered, they lay emphasis on the moral and ethical values which are to be imbibed. The gifts distributed during the ceremonies, well, that shows the humanistic approach. And it contributes to the society consciousness of the yajamanas, the performer also, since people belonging to the different strata of the society are involved in the performance of ritual. And then, even for the non-believers, I would like to say, well, rituals are like Ayurveda. Well, it is said about Ayurveda, whether they're good, they cure the disease or not, they don't do you anything harm. There are no side effects. So the samskaras are such, when you perform, there will never be any evil effects or bad effects, no side effects. On the other hand, it contributes to your welfare and personality development for that matter. Well, the samskaras are to be performed by the grihastha. Who is a grihastha? That is the point number one in the handout that we have. Well, before that, I would like to say one small thing. In the schedule of lectures that we have provided, we have the in the next lecture will be the prenatal ceremonies. The fourth one, instead of the original thing Upanayana, we are going to have the postnatal ceremony. Fifth one will be the rite of initiation, and the rest of the things will be as it is. So made a small change. 4 and 5 becomes 5 and 4 like this, and therefore a new schedule is given to you. Now who is a grihastha? Literally it means grihe tishtati iti grihastha, one who remains in the house. But it signifies not an ordinary householder, but a qualified householder, one who knows and carries out his responsibilities and duties as a householder. Only he is fit to be called as a grihastha. Well, it is said a house can be built with brick and mortar, but a home has to be made with love and affection and mutual trust. Griha has another meaning, refers to wife. Na griham griham ityahuhu, grihini griham uchyate, it is said. Not just ordinary house, it is only the wife who is called as griha. And therefore, a grihastha means literally one who is, conceptually, one who is associated with his wife. Therefore, when we say a grihastha is qualified to perform the rituals, it automatically means that he has to be necessarily associated with his wife. And in many of the Griha Sutras, it is specifically stated that if you are not associated with your wife, you are not eligible to perform the rituals. And Manusmriti speaks very high of grihasthas. Yatha vayum samashritya vartante sarvajantavaha tatha grihastamashritya vartante sarva ashramaha. Just as all beings are dependent upon air to breathe, so also all the ashrama people are dependent upon the grihastha, the householder, for their existence. Well, that brings us to, we have to remind ourselves about the 4 ashramas: the brahmacharya ashrama, the grihastha ashrama, the vanaprastha ashrama, and the sannyasa ashrama. The brahmacharya, the celibate life, grihastha as householder, vanaprastha, in those days it was observed, the husband and wife, in their old age, they used to resort to the forest and live their life. And sannyasa, that is a monk's life, one who has taken to monkhood or the mendicant's life. And the grihastha life is center, a pivotal format for all these 4 ashramas. So a grihastha is necessarily to be accompanied by his wife, as we have seen. So that is the point number one that we have discussed about the grihastha. Then we go to the point number 2. Some of the Griha Sutras describe 8 forms of marriage. Brahmo daivas tathai varshaha, prajapatyas tathā suraha, gandharvo rakshasas cheti, paishasas cheti ashtamo mataha, is said. We are not going to see elaborately all the 8 forms of marriage. We are going to concentrate only on the popular form of marriage as it exists today. But we will quickly say, just see what the 8 forms mean. The first one is Brahma. The bridegroom is sought by the father of the bride. He must be a Vedic scholar. The bridegroom must be a Vedic scholar. The second one is Daiva, where again the bridegroom is sought by the bride's father. And the bridegroom is a Ritvik priest, is actually a priest who is capable of performing the yajnas. Then the Arsha is one where the prospective bridegroom offers a pair of a cow and a bull to the father of the bride and requests for the hand of his daughter. Prajapatya is the one that is existing now popularly. It is planned and arranged by the parents of both sides. Asura is one where a kanya shulka is demanded, that is, a bridal fee is demanded. The father of the bridegroom has to give a lot of money to take the bride from this particular family. Gandharva is one where a girl and a boy love each other and may get married with mutual consent, with or without the consent of the parents. Rakshasa is a form of marriage where a man abducts a particular girl and gets married to her. Paishacha is more or less sexual harassment, and this is not recommended by any of the Griha Sutra writers. About 50 years back, the marriages spread over, all the ceremonies were spread over about 5 days. Nowadays it is performed in about 2.5 days or 2 days. And if the bridegroom happens to be a citizen of the United States and he lands straight from US, then on his demand, the entire ritual is performed even a single day for that matter. Yes, even now. Originally, the entire marriage ceremony was a simple affair. Vagdanam cha pradanam cha charanam panipidanam saptapaditi panchango vivaha parikirtitaha. Only 5 steps were recommended. Vagdana, oral agreement, a contract, and pradanam, giving the hand of the daughter to the bridegroom. Charanam is welcoming of the bridegroom and washing his feet in the conventional manner. Panipidanam, the bride and the bridegroom catching hold of each other's hand. Panigrahana, as we say. And then Saptapadi, taking the 7 steps, about which we are going to see a little later. Only these are the 5 angas, intermediary steps, in the Vivaha ceremony, it is said. But over the centuries, more and more rituals were added to the main ritual, and it became very elaborate. A lot of preliminary rituals were also got added. That takes us to point number 3 here. Well, some of the preliminaries are to be observed for every ritual for that matter, for all the samskaras, most of the samskaras. For example, the one known as Matrika Pujana. On a Friday, an auspicious Friday previous to the marriage, this Matrika Pujana is performed. It is performed in honor of the departed mothers of the particular family. The mothers are the women who died before their husbands died. So as a mark of this particular ritual, dishes favorite to those particular women who departed are prepared and served to 5 women whose husbands are alive. They are honored with saris and blouse pieces and garlands and kumkum, chandan, etc. Now, on the day previous to the marriage, a number of preliminary rites are performed right from the morning, as described in the ritual text. I shall briefly enumerate them. If time permits, we can have a little more discussion at the end. We begin with, as all rites are begun, Ganapati Pujana. But Ganapati worship is of later origin. We don't find it during the Vedic period. But some of the mantras like Ganana Antva, Ganapatim Havamehe, Kaminkavinam, Humashravastamam, Jeshtharajam Brahmanam, Brahmanaspata Anas, Shinvan, Uthibisthita Sadhanam is found in the Vedas. But later they were taken in praise of Ganesha. We also have in the Taittiriya, Tatpurushaya Vidmehe, Vakratundaya Dhimehi, Tanno Danti Prachodayat. But Bodhayana Griha Sutra Shesha, a supplementary to Bodhayana Griha Sutra, it describes the Ganapati Pujana and prescribes it for all rites before the rite proper is begun. Then we go on to the Punyahavachana, a purificatory ceremony. The elders are addressed with great reverence, Manas Samadhiyatam, and they will reply saying, Samahita Manasahasmaha, we are all very, very much pleased. Prasidantu Bhavantaha, all of you, let me be pleased. Shantirastu, Pushtirastu, Tushtirastu, Riddhirastu, Avignamastu, Aishyamastu, Arogyamastu, Shivankarmastu, Swasti Bhavantu, Pruvantu. Let there be peace, let there be growth, happiness, prosperity, absence of impediments, let there be long life, health, austerities. All these are sought, and elders reply in positive. Then there is a preliminary rite called Udaka Shanti. Udaka means water. Varuna is invoked in a pot full of water, and the mantras are chanted, and the sanctified water is poured on the head of the performers, and the entire area is sprinkled with that holy water. And then again we have a small brief ritual called Ankurarpana. Soaked grains are sprinkled over pots containing some sand, and it will grow in the course of the next 2 or 3 days, and their growth is symbolic of the fertility that is expected in the family. The family should grow just as the plants grow. That is the idea. Then a preliminary rite called Nandi Shraddha, Nandi or Abhyudaya Shraddha, is performed in honor of the departed fathers of the family. Then there is a small rite called Vichinna Agnihotra, Vichinna Agni Sandhana. Because as per rules, the domestic fire used to be kept as it is for all throughout the day, and then continuously it should never get extinguished. But then nowadays it is not the Agni ritual is not performed in most of the houses, and therefore a small rite is performed. So it signifies the revival of the sacred fire, and some oblations are offered into that particular fire. Then we have the ritual called Upasana. It's actually the worship of the domestic fire. Then we have here a small ritual called Graha Yajna. The 9 planets are worshipped, appeased, with the offer of the particular grain associated with them, and particular colored cloth that is associated with all the 9 planets. And then we have a small ritual called Kautuka Bandhana. Actually, a thread which is anointed with the yellow turmeric powder is tied in the anklet, in the hands of the both bride and the bridegroom. It is a kind of taking a vow. Yes, we will continue with this ritual and perform it in all faith. That is the understanding. Then the bridegroom performs sort of a vow, as the last vow as a brahmachari, because he is going to become a grihastha a little later. So these are some of the preliminaries which are observed on the morning of the day previous to the marriage, and in the evening there is a temple worship. The bridegroom goes to the temple, offers worship, and then there is a ritual called Varaprasthana, the procession of the bridegroom. In those days he was taken on a procession on a horseback or on an elephant. Nowadays he is taken on a car. Sometimes the car is decorated like a horse or an elephant or a hamsa with a music band and all that. Sometimes crackers are bursted. Now,
the music band plays film songs. Yeah. Great.
Yes. And then we go to the point number 4. Request of the bride's father. The bridegroom's father then he formally requests the assemblage of elders to seek the bride for his own son in a formal way. He recites 2 mantras now. I'll just say the meaning of it. By one of the mantras he prays that the path of the elders who are going for seeking the bride is to be alright, smooth and straight, and that the union of the bride and the bridegroom must be easily accomplished. But the second mantra has a peculiar connotation. It is actually in praise of Indra, nothing to do with the marriage ceremony for that matter. But then the word Vara, there is a word Vara. Vara means generally bridegroom. That particular word occurs in that particular mantra. That's all. But here it means only excellence, some excellent qualities of Indra are extolled. But then since the word Vara occurs there, it is just incorporated here, where it refers to the bridegroom also. We will see many such cases in the rituals, in the samskara. A word, a particular mantra may not be of actually relevance to a particular ritual, but a word occurring in it may be of some concern to the ritual, and therefore it is just culled out from the Vedas and incorporated into the performance of the ritual as such. Some of the ritual texts, they also prescribe some dance and music in the home of the bride at night of the same day, that is the day previous to the marriage, like Shankara in a Grihya Sutra for that matter. Then the bridegroom is supposed to recite two mantras, which are quite significant. Abhratrghneem Varuna Apatighneem Brihaspate Indra Aputragneem Lakshmiyam Tamasmai Savitasuva. That's a meaning. It is actually in the Atharva Veda. Means, O Varuna, this girl should not harass my brothers. She should, O Brihaspati, she should not harass her own husband. O Indra, she should not harass the children. Let her have all auspiciousness only. Then there is another mantra. Aghor Chakruhu Apatigniyedhi Shiva Patibhya Sumana Suvarchaha Jeevasur Deva Kamasyona Shanno Bhavad Vipade Esham Chatushpade. May you not have evil eyes. May you not harass your husband. May you be favorably disposed towards your husband. May you have a good mind and a good luster. May you produce children that are alive. May you be devoted to the gods. May you be kind towards the two-footed and the four-footed, as we have seen earlier. The wedding day actually begins with a few rituals belonging to the folk tradition. We begin with what is known as the Kashi Yatra, a mock departure to Kashi. That is point number 5 here. That is, the bridegroom will go towards few steps towards the north, indicating that he is going for Kashi Yatra. He will be having an umbrella in his hand, a small book, and then some rice tied in a packet, like a journey, as it were, meant for a journey. And then the bride's father will come and request him, please don't go to Kashi,